So we are here at the Hartford Public Library at the Park Street branch. It's November 16th, and it's about 3:20 p.m. and we're here with Graciela Rivera, and we'll be discussing her work with the project Voices of Frog Hollow and more about her involvement in life in Frog Hollow and any other further contributions he has to add. So
okay, so to start off, could you just again like state your name and then just tell us kind of generally about your involvement with and connection to Frog Hollow?
My name is Graciela Rivera, and I'm the Hartford Public Library Park Branch Manager. This library now has a new name, which is Park Street Library at the Lyric. This is the branch I manage. I've been in Frog Hollow ever since I was about 13 or 14 years old. So I would visit the local branch, which is now this branch that I get to manage. But when it was on the corner of Babcock and Park, I would visit it as a child and made, you know, really good connections there with the librarians and the resources and programs available. And it was really pivotal in my life growing up here in this neighborhood to be able to find a place that had like computer technology, books and resources that I needed to continue on with like my schooling in high school and things like that. Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Florida. I grew up in Hialeah, and I moved around a lot as a kid. So I lived in Miami for some time. I went to many different elementary schools and middle schools there. And I think that when I moved here to the Frog Hollow neighborhood, I finally found, my family found some stability. So I was able to go to one middle school, one high school, one college. So I think I found, you know, a very welcoming neighborhood when I came here, and a lot of stability, which means a lot when you're a kid, you know, and you're trying to find yourself and, you know, make decisions about your future and things like that. Having stability is very ideal.
And so can you talk a little bit more about your time going to the library when you were young in Frog Hollow and kind of just your interactions with the Frog Hollow community, some memories?
It's interesting because growing up, you know, in Frog Hollow, I used to take the city bus to school because the Connecticut Transit had a bus stop specifically for Hartford High School students. So right here on the corner of Park and Babcock, I would take a city bus and it would take me straight to school. And, you know, on my way there, the fire station on the corner, I would always see the firefighters, and it was a very lively neighborhood. It still is. So, you know, a lot of the people in the neighborhood know each other. Very friendly neighbors. They're the little markets, the little stores, the bodegas, as people call them, you know, would make great sandwiches, and I would have that for breakfast. And, you know, it was really nice. And visiting the library, I met, you know, different people there, and really gained an interest in reading and read some books that were that I could relate to as a Latina, you know, person in the neighborhood. So there's one called When I Was Puerto Rican by Esmeralda Santiago, and I actually did a paper on that when I was in high school because I was so inspired by that story of this girl moving from Puerto Rico to New York and how that changed her life and the many opportunities she was able to have here in the United States. And sounded like something that I could really relate to, so.
And you kind of touched on this, but what part of your like upbringing, as you mentioned, like growing up with this library, made you want to stay in this community and work specifically for the library?
It's really interesting because my first summer job ever through Capital Workforce was working at the Dwight branch, which is the next neighborhood over in Parkville. And, you know, that's where I got my first ever experience working somewhere. I learned the importance of getting to work on time. there was a librarian named Miss Patience who really served as a role model for me. And, you know, I learned how to use the library system there. I really got some really good experience as a library assistant. So I was able to check out materials for people and, like, practice some customer service skills. And I really got a feeling for the love of reading that I have and the fact that I really enjoy literature. So I was in a high honors English class in high school. I went to Classical Magna before it actually became a school. And we were housed inside the Harford High building. We were in portables in the back. And I remember I was the last graduating class that was going to be in that building, because that school had just become a magnet school from a program. It turned into a magnet school. And then the following year, in 2006, it was going to have its own building. So I was there. And that was that. But yeah, just really enjoyed being a part of the library. And, you know, even in the afternoons when I would leave school and I really didn't want to go home, I would just tell my mom, I'm going to the library. I'm going to go tutor, or I'm going to do my work there. So it was always like that safe place that I could go to in the neighborhood.
And can you talk a little bit more about your connection to the community? I know when we were interviewing Nigel, he was really explaining how, like, he would walk into shops and people just really, like, knew you and felt, like, very much that community sense through your interactions with them. Can you talk a little bit more about how you sustain that, how that is part of your life here?
Yeah, I mean, I really value the things that you can find in Frog Hollow. It's amazing that a lot of the business owners here are still here from when I was growing up, so from when I was a kid. So now that I'm in this role as a librarian, I just, you know, walk into their businesses and I still buy my, you know, some of my groceries at the mercado. I get the best alcapurrias aquí me quedo right here, and coffee, and you can't find that in other neighborhoods. So I love being able to always have that with me. So yeah, when I go into the local businesses, they all know me. I think it's really important as a librarian that works in a public library to really connect with your community, because you're a hub of information, and information is very valuable here, as it is in any public library. And it's really important because by having those connections with businesses, you can walk into their business and say, hey, can I leave a flyer for a program that I'm having? You know, I want the community to know about it. And, you know, that was one of the biggest things we did, particularly with getting ready for the grand opening of this new location. We went to all the businesses and, you know, gave them flyers of our grand opening and all the facilities we were going to have. And we wanted to include them in everything. And, you know, it's just a good thing for the community. And the businesses really appreciate the library. And we want them to know that we appreciate them, too. Oh my goodness, you're referring to just the grand opening, or like, there's so much.
I know there's like a lot of history. I know they're mentioning it's like 25, 30 year struggle to get this grand open. So I guess maybe just a little bit about that.
Definitely, yeah. There were some very, very huge movers and shakers who made this happen in this neighborhood. And, you know, some of them were Leticia Cotto, the former branch manager of this branch, who was always well connected to the NRZ, saw the importance of, you know, what it means to, like, be part of this community. We're not just an organization that's here and, you know, this is us and them, you know, us and them. No, we don't have that. We're part of this community as well. So yes, Ana Alfaro, State Representative Minnie Gonzalez, they were all huge supporters of this project. And based on what I've heard, a lot of it was like people not being on the same page about it was what made it take this long. And, you know, Minnie Gonzalez mentioned how although she was super happy to be a part of the ribbon cutting and the grand opening celebration, it's sad to know that it took this long, that, you know, it shouldn't have taken this long, but it did. But now we're here, and, you know, we hope that the generations that are here now will take care of this building for future generations to continue to, you know, be successful and have this be a platform for those future children who visit the library. You know, hopefully we get to inspire a lot of people to be the best that they can be and reach their goals.
And when did you become the manager?
Yes, back in 2017, I became the branch manager. And I worked 6 years as a part-time library assistant before that happened. So I was in school. I was finishing up my bachelor's from UConn. Mm-hmm. Then I left once I had my bachelor's because I wanted to explore and see what else was out there. Mm-hmm. But then when I saw the opportunity to come back as a branch manager, I applied for the job and got the job. And I'm in library school now. So I'll be done with my master's in information and library science from Syracuse University in June next year. Thank you. Yeah, so it's been really exciting getting this branch opened. I didn't do it by myself. There's definitely, you know, we have a team of people who helped out with building the collection. One of the most fun and exciting parts for me was looking at the collection we had at the old location and making decisions about things we want to preserve, because we know they're important to the community, such as books from Puerto Rico, Puerto Rican authors, things like that, that when Hurricane Maria happened, we know that those books would never be able to get another copy of something like that. So we have books like that at this location. And we're continuing to build our collection to be more inclusive of other cultures in the neighborhood as well. And, you know, that's something that we really pride ourselves in. The other thing is we have the biggest collection of Spanish books out of all the branches at Hartford Public Library because of the neighborhood we're in. So a lot of our books are bilingual, English, Spanish. And we're always promoting literacy, and our children's librarian is bilingual. Like, most of our staff here is bilingual. We're one of the only branches that offers bilingual programs. So any of our programs, like, anyone is welcome to come to them, and we will provide them in English and Spanish.
So I guess shifting gears to the Voices of Frog Hollow project. So how did you meet Nigel?
Well, Nigel works with me. He's a coworker. So, you know, he brings all, like, the technical digital aspect to the project, and I could sort of bring the social aspect to it, sort of say. So we just talked about it one day, and it's funny because during the summertime, since our branch was closed, we had to wait till October to open up this new location. We did a lot of our summer activities at the Art Box down the street from here, and we also did them at Baby Pope Park, which is Pope Park North, right across Burns Latino Studies. So those were the two places where we worked. And one of the ongoing themes we had was, like, colors of Frog Hollow for the summertime. So, you know, we brought jewelry making programs, mask making programs. We worked with Jesenia Garcia, local artist, Mercury, another local artist. So that was the theme, colors of Frog Hollow. Then we came up with another idea, which is Voices of Frog Hollow. And Nigel was like, well, let's interview people. We wanted to interview locals. So we basically just said, hey, on Wednesdays at 10 a.m., let's meet at the Art Box and let's just walk down Park Street and start talking to people. So that's what we did. But we found out, we noticed that going into the businesses and visiting the businesses was probably the best way to go about doing the Voices of Frog Hollow project. And I think part of the challenge was because we were closed. So a lot of our local people that would often visit the library weren't accessible to us because we were closed. And I was able to connect with a couple of them down the street at the church, at the secondhand store that's down there. But I found out organically that the best thing to do would be to visit the businesses. And it was amazing because some of the local businesses I wasn't connected to. So I was able to learn more about, for example, Viva Mexico, who's been in the neighborhood for 20 years. And, you know, the owner there shared how he could choose to have his business elsewhere in Connecticut. He doesn't live in Frog Hollow, but the customers that he serves are in Frog Hollow. So that's why he's been here for 20 years. Like, the customers that he serves and that keep his business alive and thriving are specifically in the Frog Hollow neighborhood. So, you know, he's been here for 20 years, and I thought that was amazing. There's some amazing history here. So as Nigel and I walked around, like, we discovered a lot of different businesses, and we're amazed at the fact that some of them have been here for more than 20 years. And they shared like some of the changes that they've seen in on Park Street, like the sidewalk projects from back in the day and things like that. Some things didn't go well, some things did. They also talked to me about the amazing festivities they would have during Christmas time, and they wish to bring those back. They would have a coquito competition, and they would have the parrandas, so they would have like a group of them go around playing music and singing during Christmas, and they would visit all the businesses. So they're hoping to bring that back once COVID things get better and things like that. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
And I mean, you touched on it a little bit, but will you just go into deeper detail about describing the Voices of Frog Hollow project in your own words?
Definitely. The other piece of the Voices of Frog Hollow project that we were intentional about was asking people, you know, what do you think about the new library that's getting built, and, you know, what are your hopes for that library? And, you know, they all share that they're really excited about it, they're really happy, they're hoping to see a lot of resources and help for the community in the new building. You know, they really shared how much they love and appreciate the library, and you know how happy they are that this is happening. So that was basically it. We also talked to them and asked them about the neighborhood, what they think about their neighborhood, and things like that. But for the most part, I think what was really important was to like capture each person and each business in hopes that we could later on share that with people in the community, because I think a lot of people sometimes walk down these streets but don't necessarily know, you know, what businesses are here. And sometimes we spend our money elsewhere, but there's some amazing businesses here that we need to invest more in.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the process of just kind of like walking down the street and going to these businesses. Is that all you guys did, or how did you like kind of go through the process of selecting the specific people and places you guys were going to be like talking to and interacting?
Some people I had already made connections with through like different programs and things that I've done here in the past. So one of the things that I do in collaboration with the Hispanic Health Council is we raise awareness about domestic violence in October. So we do this huge culminating event in the month of October. We just had our fourth one this past month. And we usually go around the businesses just letting them know what we have going on, the fact that we want to create awareness. Before the culminating event, we have weekly programs all throughout the library. And one of the things we do is there's a walk that the Hispanic Health Council puts together, and, you know, we join them and are a part of it. So we walk from the Hispanic Health Council's main location on Main Street all the way down here. And so our last stop this year around was the library, was the new library. The year before that, we stopped at the Art Box. We ended our walk there. And it's something really nice that the community really embraces. During the walk, everybody has posters of like different messages about domestic violence, you know, stop the violence, get help, just positive things going on. The Hispanic Health Council has a woman empowerment group that was created by Maria Ortiz. She's a community specialist there. So every year in October, Maria and I work together to bring awareness and hopefully to inform the community about all the amazing resources that are out there for victims of domestic violence.
Can you talk a little bit more about your involvement with the Hispanic Health Council? We haven't really heard about this before.
Yeah, it's really interesting because when I started working as a branch manager at our former branch, Maria Ortiz walked in one day and told me about these presentations that she does where she brings awareness about domestic violence and teaches people about it and, you know, what the red flags are and things like that. So she was looking to bring those presentations to the library, and I automatically agreed to it because I think it's something so important. And as a public librarian, I think it's important to continue to inform your community of all the things available to them. So we started, I started coordinating these presentations with Maria. I would invite women to come and join us for these conversations. And, you know, from there, it turned into a group that she created. And ever since, like, every year we do this October Domestic Violence Awareness Programming, as well as the culminating event. And we get a lot of support from the community with things like that. The local businesses give out gift cards and things for us to raffle. at our culminating event. A lot of people come to it. We get about 100 people coming. This year was really interesting because we wanted to be inclusive of males as well. So we had a guest speaker, Iran, from Peace Builders, from that organization, sharing his own personal experience with domestic violence. So it was really interesting, and it's something that, you know, we look forward to every year, and the community keeps asking for it and looking forward to it.
Is that the same Iran that you
not from hip store
club? Oh, no, it's not the hip store club. It's another Iran. Yeah, it's another Iran.
But that's Compass Peace Builders, or is it?
He started the Compass Peace Builders.
Okay, cool. I did a project with them my freshman year.
So. Oh, very nice. Yeah, he started the Compass Peace Builders.
Nice.
And he has a youth group, and we're looking to work with him now to bring his youth group here.
Oh, yeah, but that'd be awesome at the library.
Yeah, but it was the first time ever that he had done a testimony about his own experience. Mm-hmm. And wow, his life trajectory is amazing. It's heart-wrenching, but it's amazing that he was able to come out of all of that and look at him now, right? Someone successful, someone helping other kids who were in the same position he was in when he was younger.
Is he a resident of Frog Hollow?
No, I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Yeah, we're always looking for people.
Oh, yeah. I think Marie Ortiz, although she's not he's not a resident either, but I'm sure he works with the children of Frog Hollow, the youth of Frog Hollow, and he lived here as a kid as well.
Oh, he might definitely be.
Yeah.
So I could connect you to Iran as well.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, connect you to him.
And so you talked about the inspiration being kind of this original project, Colors of Frog Hollow.
Yeah, that was our summer theme, our summer programming theme.
Okay, so how did you come up with that, and then how did that lead to, going in more to the inspiration of Voices of Frog Hollow?
Yeah, I think, we met a couple times with our youth services librarian, Nancy Mendon, Nigel was a part of, we built this committee of people who were going to help us plan, the grand opening celebration and things like that. And we did that way early on because as a part of that, we incorporated a 6-week art workshop series leading up to the grand opening of the library. So from mere conversations, we just started thinking, Colors of Frog Hollow and Voices of Frog Hollow, and maybe we'll have a Sounds of Frog Hollow eventually, and a Taste of Frog Hollow, which is something a Trinity student mentioned as well.
When do you need these then?
You can always email me.
I'll scan. I'm gonna have the turn of kids zoom tonight.
Okay, in 2 weeks or so is good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Good to see you. My first time in.
Oh, welcome. Sorry.
we were actually talking about that, thinking about making the walking tour, really incorporating more than just trying to see what we can do, more than just visuals and stuff, incorporating taste, sound,
all
the senses into it.
Absolutely, that would make it a phenomenal thing. Come experience the neighborhood,
Yeah.
That would be nice.
So what was we heard from Nigel, you were explaining kind of the technical part of the process of making the videos, but on your end, more the social part, what was the process of making the videos?
Yeah, I must be really honest. I was really out of my comfort zone doing this.
Yeah.
just walking down Park Street, walking into the stores and saying hi. And what really helped, I think, is, I'm a known face in the neighborhood, but also the fact that I was wearing my Hartford Public Library, badge, and I'm hi, I'm here from the library. The library is such a trusted trusted entity, right, in this neighborhood. So that really helped, people open up, and we talked about all kinds of things that led to really interesting information that they would share about their business and why they're still here and some of the concerns they've had in the neighborhood with violence and crime and the Hartford Police Department and things like that. So it was just really interesting, and I think more of that needs to be done. I learned a lot from this, and I want to continue to do this kind of work because I think it's really important to learn about your neighbors.
Yeah.
Learn about your neighbors and the value that they bring to the neighborhood.
Was there anything that was like really surprising that you uncovered from doing projects and talking to all these people?
One of the things that I wasn't necessarily surprised about, but I kind of was like a little bit disappointed in, and I hope that something gets done about it at some point, is the businesses just being concerned about violence, being a victim of violence in the neighborhood, and how if they try to advocate for their business or keep their business, the sidewalk clean outside and things like that, if they complain about something, people might retaliate in the neighborhood and beat them up or something like that. That was one of the concerns I heard from one of the business owners, and that they wish, that there were more control of that in the neighborhood.
And what are some of
people would just say how, they think they wish things were a little bit better in the neighborhood in terms of like the garbage on the street. That was a recurring theme. The situation with the homeless population, the drugs, it wasn't like this 20 years ago in Frog Hollow. Like, things weren't, you couldn't see the drug activities running so rampant in the neighborhood. Or if it was, it wasn't as obvious. Things have definitely changed in terms of that. So
When we talked to Nigel, he mentioned that when you guys walk through these places, people would always mention like different people and places when you guys were talking to them. Was there any like specific recurring people that people would bring up, or places they would talk about?
They mentioned Leticia Cotto, our former library manager. One of the business owners said how she loves poetry, and she was able to do read her poems at some point during one of her visits to the library. I guess she had done a program with Leti where she came and read her poetry, probably during Poetry Month in April. So I thought that was really interesting, and I was like, oh, I mean, we might have a lot of talent, amongst these business owners, and they might be willing to do some programming with me at some point. So I've kept that on my radar as well. And, it's been really interesting because a lot of them share stories of how their kids grew up in the neighborhood. And, they would always come to their shop. And now they've gone on to do other things. And it's just nice listening to that and listening to stories of, there was one, Fiesta Time had moved around a couple times on Park Street. I thought that was interesting. And, sharing how much the community appreciates her and keeps coming back to her business because they don't find that level of customer service anywhere else. So that was interesting.
And you talk about, about the census and stuff, and, so why with this project do you think it is important to capture the visual aspect?
Yeah, I think a lot of times in our community, I think visuals are kind of like the best way to explain things to people sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So capturing things on video, I think, preserves some of the history, right? 10 years, 15 years down the line. We're hoping to incorporate this into our time capsule as well, because we're going to have a time capsule here. We actually have the container for it already. And we want to have a ceremony to go with it. But we're hoping to have some of that content stored in that time capsule so that when 25 years from now someone opens it, they're able to access these stories and learn more about what went on when the new library opened, and different projects that were in the works during that time, challenges we were facing because of the pandemic, etc.
When would be what's the trajectory of when you guys would
open
the timeline then?
2046. Yeah, it'll be closed for 25 years.
Wow,
that's yeah.
So fun.
Yeah, so that was that form that he was asking me about, because I'm getting community input as to what should be preserved in this time capsule and why. And, someone suggested, which I thought was really cool, collect all the business cards from the businesses and put them in there so that people can see what businesses were around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was neat.
Yeah, maybe that could be in the walking tour after school, like there's a time
Oh, yes, please incorporate that, because it's been hard to kind of like let people know about that. A lot of people don't understand what a time capsule is, too.
Yeah.
People are like, a time capsule, what is that? So just I'm having a virtual program on November 29th. It's more like a community conversation on time, the time capsule. What's a time capsule? What do you want to see in there?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what kind of like things people bring up there.
Yeah. I'll share the flyer with you guys. Maybe you can join us as well. Yeah.
Maybe
we'll
join the Zoom.
Yep.
And what impact do you hope the project has?
I'm hoping that the project creates like a positive identity for this neighborhood, helps create that and break some of the stereotypes about, you know, some of the culture, some of the people in the community. Like I went to the Mexican business, Viva Mexico, I went to Aquí Me Queda, I went to the just seeing the value, just for people to like get to know each other and see the value there is in this neighborhood and kind of like build that neighborhood pride about, hey, you know, Frog Hollow has some amazing people and some amazing businesses in this neighborhood, and we should be supporting them one way or another. Even if you go and buy a cup of coffee, buy it in Frog Hollow. You know, I think I'm hoping that we get to develop a series of other things going on in the neighborhood, and I hope that this inspires the youth to create projects like this one and to understand the importance of the preservation of history in your neighborhood and what that means.
And do you have anything else to add about the project?
I think next
we're going to talk about more, like, places that you remember.
Okay, let me see.
We can always go back
to it. Yeah. I just wanted to say that COVID was, you know, I think made it a little bit more challenging, made the project a little bit more challenging, because like I was saying, because of that, our branch was closed, and we get 3,000 visits a month. When we were at our old location, we're one of the busiest branches in the system, and because of that, like we didn't have access. There are more people that I wish I would have been able to capture their stories, but haven't been able to yet, because you know the connection has been lost due to the fact that we were closed for so long. But I'm hoping to be able to reconnect with them now that we're open. I have seen a couple of people that used to visit our old location come here and reconnect with me, so I'm hoping to be able to share more stories and have like a big collection of stories.
So basically, like in our research, we've been coming across a lot of different people who we like kind of have questions about, and we're just gonna like run them by you, see if you like know anything about them, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
So the first person, Nigel mentioned a man named Celestino, who he said he was very loved by the community.
Yeah, Celestino was an amazing advocate for resources and things for the youth in this neighborhood. And he actually died pre-COVID. He was an avid runner, and one day he was running and he just collapsed. And yeah, this was pre-pandemic. I believe he died the year before COVID came. And yeah, it was very unfortunate, because I'll always remember. See you tonight, right? Okay, I'll see you tonight virtually then. Take care. So going back to Celestino, he was an amazing advocate for resources for the city and for the community. And he was a big loss. I remember in NRZ meetings how he would like really just, you know, put his heart on his sleeve and really express. So Celestino would really put his heart on his sleeve and really express his concerns and the need for more resources for this neighborhood. You know, when we were at that small branch before we moved here, the children computers were on the windowsills. We had no tables for the children computers and things like that. So Celestino, he said the last time I saw him was actually at an NRZ meeting. And that was the last time I saw him. And he said, I will never forget when he said, I will fight for this library until the day I die. Like, I hope to see this library before I die. Something along those lines. And I will never forget that. And I'm so happy that other people in the neighborhood have been bringing him up. And that just reminded me that when we interviewed a local barbershop owner, I forget his name, but it's the barbershop right next to Viva Mexico.
Is it called Favorito?
I think so.
Or, wait, you're gonna have
to throw. Let me say, because.
So, yeah,
oh, can't see the. I can't see the name from here. It's right next to the Brosterot.
Okay.
Right next to the Brosterot.
Yeah.
So, we were interviewing him, and he. He was saying how he didn't know that Celestino had passed away. So we were giving him the news that Celestino had passed away, and he shared how devastated he is knowing that Celestino passed away, because Celestino was a mentor for many people. He touched so many lives. And, you know, during that interview, I was just in shock of the fact that he had not known that Celestino had died. And we were sharing that with him at that moment. And... you know, that was really, really sad. But what really made me feel really, really proud of Celestino was, you know, although he's passed away, he's still, like, we keep his story alive. We keep his story alive. And the fact that people are sharing how impactful he was in their lives is really priceless. So I hope there's a way we can continue to commemorate him. I don't think he looked his age. Probably maybe late 50s.
Okay.
Early 60s.
And do you know, like, did he grow up in Frog Hollow? Or?
What I do know is he was a boxer in Puerto Rico, so he's always been into sports.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And his son, Celestino Jr., is a firefighter.
In Frog Hollow?
I think in the neighborhood over, but at this point, I believe his family, like his... his ex-wife and his kids have moved to Puerto Rico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And has he moved as well, you know?
His son?
Yeah.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, we've been trying to get in touch with them, because whenever we plan, you know, special events and things, we'd like for them to be present.
Right. Yeah, I know it's interesting. I don't remember, like, all of the nominees. Heroes, a phone call for the murals. I wonder if he was on that list, or like maybe.
And so, I should have nominated him. Like, at the time, it was like all a blur. But
yeah, no worries.
But there will be other opportunities to honor Celestino, I'm sure.
So I guess the next person that we read a lot about in newspapers, Gloria Cardillo.
Gloria Cardillo?
Yeah.
Oh. No, I don't know. Could you tell me, like, what organization she was connected to or something like that, if any?
It was kind of similar to Celestino.
Oh, okay.
That she was involved in many different organizations, which is kind of, I think, we read one article, it was, like, it was the Southside neighborhood
names. Oh, okay.
And kind of just calling her, like, a mother of the neighborhood. Mm. So we were interested about just hearing, like, people not from the newspaper, maybe who know about her.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I guess we did hear about Miran and Maria. Nigel did talk about that, those interviews with them about Fiesta Time. Store,
yeah.
Or Hip Stop.
Yeah, Hip Stop.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you could just talk about your own sentiments about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because Maria actually remembers my mother. Like, she knows my mom. My mom used to buy stuff when we would do parties and things at the apartment we lived on Affleck Street. So she remembers her from that. And it was just really nice to hear Maria and, like, all of the changes that she's seen in the neighborhood and how much she appreciates the neighborhood and the library. And, you know, Iran's story is also one that's very captivating and impactful about, you know, decisions that you make sometimes when you're younger and, you know, bad choices when you know, growing up in a neighborhood where there's violence and drugs and all these other things. But, like, finding your way out of that and just, you know, having now his own business and things like that. Wow, like, these are amazing role models for the people of this neighborhood. And I think it's really important to share those stories so that people see that, you know, there's hope and there are other options, and certain things in your neighborhood do not define the rest of your life. So I think that's wonderful.
Another name that came up a lot was Maria Sanchez, connected to the Sacred Heart Parish or Church, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If you know anything about her, talk a little about her role.
Yeah, people, I unfortunately didn't get to meet her, but people have always shared a lot of positive things about her and how, you know, determined she was and what a huge advocate she was for, you know, the importance of voting, how important it was for people in the neighborhood to vote, to exercise their voting right, to be informed, to, like, advocate for the things that their neighborhood needs and things like that. So I think Maria Sanchez is one of those people. She's super well-known in the neighborhood, and I think in the city in general. And I think people really do look up to her a lot and identify with her because she was from Puerto Rico, you know. So her story and how she came to Hartford from Puerto Rico and grew up. She worked in the tobacco fields here. And from being a tobacco field worker went to getting involved with politics. You know, it's just amazing the level of support that she had behind her. And a lot of people mentioned the little shop she had on Albany Avenue. She had a little shop on Albany Avenue, very close to Cork Middle School, where it was like a little bodega. And she would hold, like, little community meetings there as well. So, and kids used to go there and buy their candy. The little corner store in the neighborhood.
Viva Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
This interview we never really heard about.
Yeah.
That place of
video. Yeah, Viva Mexico is the restaurant. It's more like it's a mix of things. It's not just like a restaurant. They sell Mexican food, but they also sell like traditional Mexican artifacts, like the traditional candies. Like, these are all imported things from Mexico. And you know, the owner, Orlando shared, like, how important it is for him to keep his business thriving, and the fact that he knows that he serves the Mexican population in this community and how important that is for him. And, you know, he really focuses on their interest and things. So whenever he's ordering items to sell in his shop, he'll reach out to the community and find out what it is that they're looking for. So he bridges that gap between, like, being away, a home away from home, kind of, I would say, is his business, you know, being able to find those little things that you miss because you immigrated to this country and now, you know, you made this your home. So I think that's really, it's really heartwarming. It reminds me of when I moved from Florida to here because my mom used to always go to a Colombian bakery over there. And I miss the pan de bono so much. This is really delicious cheese bread. So they sell it here. And when I went to the mercado one day, and I went to Antojitos Colombianos as a kid, and I saw that they sell pan de bono there, I was so happy. I can't express how happy I was because I was like, a little part of you know, something that I loved in Florida, I can find here now.
Yeah.
So that made me so happy. And I still buy pan from there. You guys should try it sometimes. It's delicious.
Yeah.
So that we also read a lot in the archives and heard a little bit about St. Anne's Thrift Store and like the people involved with that.
Yeah, I actually interviewed Imelda Barajas.
Yes, that's what I remember.
Imelda Barajas, she's kept that thrift store running, and it's amazing. Like it's also a food pantry.
Okay.
Just so you guys know, they give out food on certain days there that people can pick up, and they also they sell all kinds of items, you know, for a very good price. And it's something needed in this neighborhood because a lot of people can't afford, you know, to buy costly things. So they go there and are able to find really good stuff. It's a huge space that they have there. And it used to be some kind of a gym, the church gym or something. And, you know, there's been talks in the community about maybe somebody potentially buying the space, making it like a community space as well. So that kids can go and play in there. So we'll see what happens over time with it. But yeah, I think that's a really important spot, right? Across the street from the Art Box.
Yeah.
So it's in a very central location. It's just sad that the church is no longer operating there. So, I mean, I've heard a lot of people mention how they used to go to Mass there. I used to go to Mass there sometimes. It's sad to see that close now.
The newspaper articles also mentioned, I'm not sure if you know who this is, because it was like from the 70s, 80s, like Sister Simone de Beauvoir. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
So then I guess just like all these people, or like what places and people specifically do you remember? You've talked about like El Mercado, when you moved here, like growing up.
Yeah, like growing up, I did everything here. My mom actually had a business right on Park Street as well, called Grace Hair Studio. So yeah, so I used to work there Fridays and Saturdays with my mom while I was in high school, junior and senior year. So and the Caribe restaurant right across the street, yeah, they've been there for about 15 years or so. And we always bought food from there when we were busy in the business, in the hair salon. The Gitano supermarket was there. So we did all our groceries right in the neighborhood. We didn't always have a car, so I think that was the easiest way for us to do things, do them right in our neighborhood. There was a place called Peerless Travel, Luna Travel. Where we would pay our bills, and my mom would send money to her mom in Dominican Republic. But a lot of the businesses are still up and running. Some are no longer, like the Fashion Box, where you could find clothes and shoes and things like that.
Cool.
Yeah, that's no longer around.
What was the name of your mom's business?
Grace Hair Studio. No, it closed back in like 2007 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well that's all of our questions.
Okay.
Do you have anything else to add? Anything about Voice of Rock Hollow? Places, just like messages,
I hope this helps, you know, people gain more interest and love in learning about the history of their neighborhood and what that could mean for them. I hated history when I was a kid, but the older I got, the more value I saw in it, so I really enjoy it now.
Yeah.
I hope to share some of that enjoyment with other people and foster that. I know you guys already work with Saina, so not Saina. The Hispanic Health Council, like Maria Ortiz. I know we brought up Iran. The barber shop, I forget the guy's name in there, but...
Yeah.
If you go in there, he has pictures of, like, a bunch of things that have happened in the community.
Yeah. Is this the one...
It's really interesting.
I watched a video with someone. Is it from Cafe Burrito, or is it you?
I'm not sure. It's a guy. It's a guy that I interviewed.
Okay. But yeah. Is it the one in the video?
Yeah, he's in the video, and it's a very small little barber shop.
I remember watching it, and there were, like, pictures of it.
Yeah.
So I'll look back on that for sure.
Yeah. That was really neat. And he mentioned, you know, stuff about politics and politicians and how he wished that they were more out here and present in the neighborhood, seeing what happens in the neighborhood. I remember now that he mentioned that.
And do you possibly have their contacts?
Yes, I can connect you to Maria Ortiz. I'll send her an email.
Okay,
and
great.
CC you guys on it, okay?
Awesome, yeah.
And Iran, too? Would you be interested in talking to him?
Sure.
Sounds good.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You.
You're welcome.
And, thanks. Yeah, we look forward to, like, continuing.